Good afternoon. It is One Bell of the Afternoon Watch. This is your Captain Joe broadcasting to you live, unscripted and unrehearsed, with my dear and good friend Bill West, Juris Doctor, and a number of other things. And Bill and I are going to have a continuation of our several conversations that we have had before. Before I ask Bill to give us his CV, and then into the discussion of the things that I want to cover, it is my pleasure and my privilege always to be broadcasting to you from the Gene Voss Studio on the magical Isle of Vashon, 101.9 on the FM band, and broadcasting also live and streaming live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org. My greetings in particular this year are a greetings of gratitude for a wonderful Christmas season for your captain. I was surrounded by family and friends, and in particular, grandchildren. And for right now, I have another one of my children, one of our children, and his wife, and another granddaughter is here with me now. I always feel very strongly, in particular when we are in times of holiday time, that I am indeed the most fortunate of men. And I try to communicate that to all of you, because one of the things that I always want for this broadcast is for you, after you've spent a half hour with me, you've given me a half hour of your life each week, that you come away feeling just a little bit better about yourself and about the world in which we live. The biblical list is pretty much the same as it has been, in that we have not had anyone cross the bar that I have not already reported to you. But I'm including here a couple of much-loved dogs. Two of my friends have just in the last few days had dogs that had been with them for years. And the grief over the loss of those animals is as real and is as genuine and as heartfelt as it is when we lose one of our own human family. So I send out to the binnacle list people, that every one of Captain Joe's people that are on the binnacle list or have lost family that have not been reported to me, or have lost pets that have not been reported to me, know that I share your grief, and that, as always, all of you remain in the palm of my hand. So, Counselor, it is always a pleasure to have you with me, and we have already agreed on a couple things that we want to talk about. So I'm going to start by asking you to refresh the recollection of all of Captain Joe's people of your own CV, curricula vitae, Latin, and since you are an attorney, you are schooled deeply in Latin. So give us your CV, and then we're going to get right into the discussion of a couple things that you and I have talked about.
Okay, well, good morning, Captain Joe, and thanks for having me, and good morning to everyone out there. Thanks for having me as well. Let's see, I studied as a fisheries biologist for my undergraduate and then my master's degrees at the University of Washington, then College of Fisheries. It no longer exists, which perhaps predicts why I did not remain a fisheries biologist forever. I got my degrees at about the time that the world's fisheries scientists were discovering to their horror that we were running out of fisheries due to shitty management and I said one of the no-nos.
I should have pointed to the sign for you, but that's all right.
Okay. Anyway,
I'm not being blanked out by the Federal Communications Commission. Carry on.
Okay. Anyway, I spent 25 years working in the field, spending a lot of time at sea on research vessels and commercial fishing vessels and government patrol ships, attempting to develop fishing methods that would allow us to continue harvesting fish from the wild in a sustainable manner. Also, for a time, I worked on efforts to develop a more environmentally benign form of aquaculture than is sort of the norm. Anyway, so I did that for about 25 years, realized that came to the conclusion that I did not want to be standing on the back deck of the research vessel with my clipboard when the last fish came aboard, and it would be my duty to say, okay, that's it, let's go home, find something else to do. So, casting about for something else to do, apparently I fell and hit my head because I then went to law school, and seeking to take advantage of my experience with wild resource management, aquatic and marine science, and my experience at sea, I decided to go to law school. Don't ask me why. I decided to go to law school, but thought that perhaps I could put my past experience, make some use of it as an environmental lawyer or a natural resources lawyer or admiralty and maritime lawyer. And so I got to do all of that. And it was fun for a while, but getting wet and getting my hands dirty and being out in the wild doing things. And so when it became, I won't say possible, but it became not quite ridiculous, I retired, and here I am.
So as in retirement, you and I live here on the magical Isle of Vashon, and we became friends, a friendship which I treasure not only for because you are the sort of person that you are, but also because you are my expert when it comes to things having to do with maritime law. I cultivate friends who are experts in fields that I am not myself, and you are a great example of that. I would make a parenthetical insertion here that when you talk about your work with the, in particular, the National Marine Fisheries Service, I was the captain of one of our cutters that was enforcing the international fisheries treaties up off of the Grand Banks. It was just before and just after the enactment of the Creatures of the Continental Shelf and treaty. And the most challenging ships that with which I had to deal were the Russians. And although you and I never sailed together, it could have been quite possible that we had, because I had fisheries agents with me sometimes, and I got them on and off of other ships in particular. And counselor is giving me a pejorative signal there. So I feel that in particular the Russians were the rapists and pillagers of the seas when it came to the way that they carried out their fisheries operations off of the Grand Banks. But it was interesting work. And I only made one personal visit to a Russian factory ship. And the reason that I only made one visit was that I sat down in the cabin with the ship's captain and with the fish master and with the political boss. And the vodka came out on the table, and I was accused of being non-cooperative because I refused to drink in the cabin of this particular ship. So I only did that one time, so my reputation out on the banks was don't mess with Unimac. That was the name of that ship. Don't mess with Unimac. Don't mess with their captain, because he's not going to come aboard and he's not going to booze with you. So one of the things that you and I have talked about, and I have reported on this program, is the, is it La Concepcion? Do I have the name right?
Yes.
And she was a party boat in California, and she caught on fire, and there almost all of her passengers died because they were not able to get out through the one escape hatch, which apparently got jammed up. And the National Transportation Safety Board did the investigation on that. And the reason that I have asked Counselor to come and talk to me about it and talk to all of Captain Joe's people about it is I do not shy away from places where my own service, the Coast Guard, has not performed as sterlingly as it was. Sterlingly, there's a new word. That's a new word from Captain Joe's vocabulary. Did not perform as well as it should. And the NTSB in particular chided the Coast Guard for taking so long to issue corrective regulations and inspections of these boats so that 30-plus people don't die. So, Counselor, the question that I have for you, and I want you to expand, well, I don't need to give you permission to expand at great length, was to talk a little bit about the liability, both personal and legal, of the Coast Guard for taking so long to do something about this, and then the whole subject of how long it takes for marine regulations to be enacted and then implemented.
Okay, well, I'll be happy to do that. The short answer, which would probably get me fired from being a lawyer if I hadn't already retired, the short answer is that that's not a case you're going to win. While the Coast Guard does have a mandate under, you know, its charter, its directives from Congress. Mm-hmm. And,
Title 10, U.S. Code.
It does have certain responsibilities that it is to carry out.
Title 14.
Yes. 14. it's under the Administrative Procedures Act, which is a body of federal law that by which Congress gives executive agencies such as the Coast Guard or the Highway Administration or you name it, delegates to them the authority to write regulations. Now, the safety regulations that govern the operation of dive boats, charter boats, party boats, ferries, vessels that carry passengers, numbering six or more. The regulations that govern the operation and equipment and the safety practices on those boats are federal regulations. They are not federal statutes. They haven't been passed by Congress. Congress has left to the Coast Guard the responsibility for promulgating these regulations through a process. And again, that the whole body of law that governs that is the Administrative Procedures Act. And the courts have recognized that this is kind of a hybrid form of law. Now, if you get popped for violating a federal regulation as opposed to a federal statute, it may or may not be as serious as if you had violated the statute. But you don't want to find out how serious it is and how bad the consequences are going to be. And it's all over the place. But the safety regulations for these boats and the inspections that are conducted by Coast Guard personnel to see that boats are abiding by those regulations, those are it's within the discretion of the Coast Guard what those regulations say and how those inspections are conducted. If someone were to say, well, these people died because the Coast Guard did an inadequate job of writing the regulations and then inadequately conducted the inspections and was negligent in how it told the operators to operate the vessel and conduct safe practices. That the legal theory would be that the Coast Guard was negligent in performing its duty, and you would have to get a court to agree and possibly a jury to agree that the Coast Guard had been negligent and then seek damages. But a court is not going to be really champing at the bit to do that. The courts recognize that Congress delegated this authority to agencies that that Congress thought would have the necessary expertise to develop these regulations, and the courts are reluctant to promote their own superior knowledge, and in fact there are rulings that say that we're not going to do that. You know, the Coast Guard are the experts. Maybe they could have done a better job. The NTSB, as Captain Joe mentioned, certainly thought the Coast Guard could have done a more timely and comprehensive and diligent job that would have saved the lives of, or at least given these people a fighting chance at surviving their fun diving adventure. From my years at sea, I understand that when you set foot aboard a boat, and especially after the lines are thrown off, you might make it back and you might not, and that's just sort of how it is. you certainly hope you will make it back, and I have, but I have known people that did not, and sometimes it was their own stupidity, and sometimes it was just bad luck, and sometimes it was somebody else's stupidity, which is another flavor of bad luck. But anyway, I think from the materials I read about this incident, there has been considerable criticism of the Coast Guard's role in developing adequate safety measures and then seeing that they're followed. And the commander of the Coast Guard has agreed with that assessment. Does that mean that somebody would win a lawsuit? It probably does not. As far as consequences are concerned, it's my own personal feeling that there are some people who, if they have not already done so, need to make some career decisions about what it is they're really good at and what they would like to do with the rest of their lives, and they might need some encouragement from the people that they report to. But in terms of getting a remedy at law, I would take that on, but only on an hourly basis. I would not take it on as a contingency.
All right, so we are, I think all of us agreed that when a terrible accident happens, that corrective action, whether it is regulatory, whether it's operational, whether it is construction and engineering, in this particular case, the boat clearly did not have sufficient ways for people to get out once a fire got started, and that those should be done as quickly as possible. I'm reminded in particular of the Titanic sinking, and it was because Titanic sank that the International Ice Patrol was formed up, and that happened almost immediately. The Coast Guard has operated the International Ice Patrol since 1914. And in my last job as the ICE boss, I was the program manager for the ICE Patrol. We still do it today. So we do it differently than we did in 1914. We no longer have cutters actually patrolling Davis Strait, but which is a particularly nasty piece of water, by the way. I occupied a weather station up there in the wintertime in Davis Strait, and it was just an awful time. Anyway, so there are other kinds of marine accidents and incidents that happen all the time. And so in years in my discussion about this, I brought up a case that was used as a case study when I was a cadet at the academy, which goes back a long way. And it has to do with the integrity of charted buoy locations on a nautical chart. And a ship ran aground. She ran outside of the buoy line in a particular channel and tried to explain that the reason she ran aground was that the buoy line was incorrectly located and encouraged the navigator, the pilot, and the captain to hug the buoy line, and they ran aground. So the court decision that came out of this was that although the sinker location is precisely determined, today we do it with these dynamic positioning system. We used to do it with horizontal sextant angles, which is another subject for another time. But the sinker location is precisely as located on the chart. But depending on the water depth, there is a scope of chain or cable between the buoy and the chain. And the prudent mariner not only husbands his stores for the long voyage, but he also is very careful to be in as close to the center line of the charted channel and fairway as he can get. So I want your commentary on that particular case, because I know that you and I have talked about it, and that what you think about that particular court decision.
Okay, well, I don't have a deep knowledge of that particular case, so I will avoid speaking of the particulars, but I am just going to say as a practical matter that the court got it right using whatever technology is available at the time to locate the vessel at the time that the anchor for a buoy is dropped. You know, so presumably, depending on the weight of the buoy and depth and currents and so on, the buoy's probably going to land pretty close to right under the point where it was dropped, but you're not going to guarantee it. It is necessary for there to be a line of some form. Chain would be typical at the lower end, and with in the old days, I suppose a wire rope riser. Nowadays, at least in the commercial field, they are tending more towards the use of synthetic ropes that will have less weight. And won't pull down on the buoy quite as hard, and you can use less line. But still, excuse me, the location of the buoy itself it's going to be somewhere near where the anchor was dropped, but it's not ever probably going to be directly over it except by accident. So indeed, the prudent mariner is going to is not going to make a practice of trying to hug the buoy line as tight as he can, because he or she will be venturing, you know, into places where there are unknowns. And in today's world, with the availability of inexpensive and accurate and reliable echo sounding equipment and GPS navigation systems, it would be imprudent to rely entirely on the buoys to do your navigations, make your navigation decisions. You would want to use your echo sounder, even if you had total confidence in your GPS position, you had total confidence in the charts that you were using, which by the way would not be real smart. You should have your echo sounder on and be watching that. It's not belt and suspenders. It's belt and suspenders and double sided tape and crazy glue and you know, whatever you can find. And in the end, you know, it is the mariner's responsibility to keep water out of the people part and to keep the ship from hitting hard things. And
bingo, you just said it. And which reminds me once again of Ever Forward running aground in Craig Hill Reach, mm-hmm, in the Port of Baltimore.
Right.
So we're going to shift quickly, and we have to move quickly because my fascinating answers to my questions have eaten up our time. But you and your lovely wife, Charlotte, have taken on a construction project, and I would like for you to ventilate to all of Captain Joe's people of a couple of the things that have happened while you have been trying to get into this house that you have bought and move into it so that Charlotte can once again sleep in her own bed and have her own kitchen.
Well, yeah, it's been a long, strange trip. We bought a house that was in need of rehabilitation. We got a very good price, but it needed a lot of work to make it habitable. To make it habitable by my standards, and it needed a lot more work to make it tolerable by Charlotte's standards, and which is not to fault her standards. But she was not interested in camping out inside a construction site. I might have been a little easier to persuade on that point. Anyway, it needed a lot of work, and it has taken a lot of work to get done. And between COVID and supply chain and people discovering that Vashon Island is not named Island by accident, that it actually is an island and that you have to use a ferry to get to and from it. And we all know how reliable and agreeable that is. And let's just say that the project has gone several months longer than we thought. It was a reasonable contract with a reasonable completion date, but so we gave up our rental house, and the time came for us to move out, and the house was nowhere near ready for us to move in, so we had to find places to put our things and find places on the island. Many of you know how easy that is, where we could park our persons for the time it would take to get the house whipped into shape. Long story, I won't give you all the details. We're getting close. The contractor is saying he hopes to at least have us in with a punch list by the end of the first week in January. I say, if true, then good. I'm thinking it might get well into January, if not till the end of January, to reach that point. But that'll be okay. The kindness and generosity of friends has made it possible for us to house ourselves and our pets. And I am deeply grateful to everyone who has helped on this, and it's a large company, so we're getting there. It's slow going, but I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm hopeful that it's not an oncoming train.
So it is my hope and my wish, and should I be able to command in this area, it would be my command that in fact your contractor would heave around and get the job done so that you and Charlotte and your animals can all be reunited in your own home. And as is always the case, we have come far too quickly to the end of our time together. It remains for me to pass on to all of Captain Joe's people that we begin a new year. We end this year with many things accomplished. Many good things have happened. We have lost friends and shipmates, classmates. One of my closest classmates died just in the last few days. And those things are all part of the cycle of life. But it is always my wish and my hope that each one of Captain Joe's people reach out and touch someone with whom you are close, that maybe would not be otherwise touched, and that we begin this new year with a sense of not only hope, which I always have, but of optimism. It will be my part for the year that we have coming up to be a part of your week every week at 12:30, 1 bell of the afternoon watch. And it is therefore, we never say goodbye. We always say, until we meet again. My granddaughter, Simonzi, and I exchanged that greeting just a few days ago. She came up and she said, Cappy, you remember, we never say goodbye. We say, until we meet again. To all of Captain Joe's people, this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. And we never say goodbye. We say, until we meet again. And as always, I am on station and watching properly.